Hey, I'm Pastor Joel, and just want to say thank you for downloading or streaming this message today. My prayer for you is that you're blessed by the content that you hear. As a church, our desire is to make disciples of Jesus, and we do that by helping people to trust and follow Him in every aspect of their daily life. So if this is something that blesses you, we just hope that you'll feel free to share this with others so that they might be encouraged and challenged by it as well. I have some top secret information to share with you today about marriage. This is something you're going to want to lean into really big. And even if you're not married, this is some good information for you to know, but especially for you married people or about to get married people in this room, this is going to blow open the secret to why you face difficulty in your marriage. All right? Only one person was excited about that so far. I don't see anybody like, come on, tell me what it is. Here it is. Here you go. Ready? Top secret information. This is why conflict exists in your marriage, why you struggle, why there are difficulties, why there's hardship. Are you ready? You married a sinner. You could have chosen anybody on planet Earth, and you chose a sinner. Here's the worst part of all of that. You are also a sinner. And guess what happens when you put two sinful people into relationship with one another? There's bound to be conflict. There's bound to be hardship. There's bound to be things that are really difficult. And so we see this play out in James chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. I want us just to read this together this morning. He says this, "What causes fights and quarrels among you?" Now, James is writing to the church, but I think we can take and apply this to marriage. And we can say if it works within these relationships and this dynamic, it works within our marriages as well. Let's go from the macrocosm to the microcosm. He says, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight." Now, here's what we see going on here. James tells us that within our lives, there's a fight going on within us that spills over into all of the relationships that we have. None more so than our marriages and with our kids, those that we're in closest relationship with. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from within? James goes, listen, if you want to know what's going on in the periphery, why you seem to have conflict and tension and stress in your marriage, it's because of something going on inside of you. You have desires, you have wants, you have things that you covet and crave, and when you don't get them, our natural instinct is to go into kill mode. I'm going to kill whatever I have to get through this barrier that's keeping me from gaining the desires of my heart so that I can get to what I want. And so James tells us this brings up a problem. Now, last week, we talked about living with a submission vision. And the first thing that we have to do is place ourselves under the authority of Christ. We submit to Christ, but then we submit to one another. And then wives to your husbands, husbands to Christ as the church. And so all of these different things. But we have this vision of submission. And the idea is that we put Christ at the center of our lives. Then we work inside of our marriages to elevate one another to the place of saying, you're more important than me. And if both people in the relationship are working enthusiastically to make the other person more important, you're in this submission competition almost of going, let me be in competition with you to make you the most important. And no, I'm going to be in competition with you to make you the most important. And that's a really beautiful picture. But what happens most of the time is we settle back in to our natural base sinful instincts because you married a sinner and you are a sinner. And our sinful desire is to say, I have things I want, and you're not going to get in my way from getting them. And if you do, I will fight with you and quarrel with you and kill you, not literally, but on this metaphorical level, please. I'm going, I'll do whatever it takes to get what I want. And when we fall into that pattern, it ends in quarreling and fighting. Then Paul tells us an even more about what's going on under the surface that causes these conflicts. Look at Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 17. Paul says, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, Serve one another humbly in love. There's that submission thing again, right? Like, do whatever it takes to elevate each other. Serve one another in love. For the entire law, verse 14, is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you'll be destroyed by each other. So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so that you are not to do whatever you want. Now, the first thing he says here, he says, you, my brothers and sisters, and he tells us what our original relationship status is. Hey, when you're in relationship, first and foremost, under the authority of Christ, then you are brother and sister to one another. We are brother and sister to one another. All right, so single people in the room, before you ever get married, you need to understand that this relationship that you want to enter into, if you're doing it in a way that I think is biblical, that you're not going to be unequally yoked, but you're going to be matched up with someone else who has the same passions and desire for a relationship with Jesus that you have, your first relationship is brother and sister. So treat one another that way before your marriage. That's the way that you hold each other up in accountability to one another, your brother, your sister. Right? And so in our relationship then as married people, he says, you look at your brother and your sister, and what do? You love them as your neighbor. The whole law is fulfilled in this command: love your neighbor as yourself. So we go, hey, brother and sister now are neighbor. Who's the most important neighbor that you have? When Jesus talked about neighbors, he wasn't talking about the people who live in the house right beside you. He goes, all people in relationship with us are our neighbors. The first and most important neighbor you have is your spouse. So how are you doing elevating them, loving them as you love yourself? That's your priority. That's your role and your job. And so when we see this, he tells us that to be brother and sister, to be neighbors, is to serve one another humbly in love. So your spouse is your closest neighbor, but then Paul issues this warning for all of us in all of our relationships, but it's especially impactful in our marriage relationships. In verse 15, he says, if you bite and you devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. And so Paul goes, hey, look, here's what's going to naturally come in to this relationship dynamic that you have. You're going to have tension, you're going to have conflict, you're going to fight, and your desire is going to be to bite and to devour each other because you want something that the other person isn't giving you. So when we move away from treating one another as God's children and seeing our spouse as our first and greatest neighbor, we end up destroying each other. And here's what I think the warning is really coming around to. Because we argue and fight and have conflict in our marriages, that's natural. But in this instance, he says the result is destruction. Because you're doing all these things with no desire to be reconciled. The desire is bite and devour one another and end up destroying one another. Because that's the conflict that's going on. And here's why. Because there is a spirit nature that Jesus gives to us when he changes us, when he saves us, he puts his spirit inside of us. And the job of the Holy Spirit is to change us, to conform into the image of Jesus Christ. But our fleshly nature, our sin, constantly fights to stay in control. I don't want to give in to the things of Jesus. I want to stay in control. I don't want a master who's going to be in authority over me and tell me what I need to do. I want to be in control. And Paul says all of the things that cause conflict in our marriage can really stem from this idea. Get into the root of what's happening inside of you. Where are you having a hard time submitting yourself and saying no to sinful desires to say yes to the leadership of the Spirit of God? That's the call. And he goes, if you do that in marriage, you'll change the way you deal with conflict because conflict is a reality of relationships. But listen to this, and I want you to write this down if you're taking notes this morning or if you're following along with us. Just get this. Look at this on the screen. We don't engage in conflict to win. We don't engage in conflict in our marriages to win. Why? Because then there is a loser.
If you engage in conflict in your marriage to win, you're going to do irreparable harm to your spouse. If you engage in conflict because you need to be the champion, you need to be the victor, guess what? You might walk away with your chest up and your head held high going, I won, I got out of that battle, I'm the one that came out on the top of that disagreement, I've got everything going for me, but guess what's happened with your spouse? They're licking their wounds, they're hurt, they're isolated because they lost. And now there is an unequal balance in the marriage relationship. There's a winner and there's a loser. And we create havoc in our marriages when we function this way. If you have that mindset that a disagreement occurs, a fight happens, conflict rears its ugly head, and you say, I want to win, you're going to create problems. We don't engage in conflicts to win. Here's the next thing I want you to see. We engage in conflict in order to fix issues in our relationship. That's what we should be focused on. I want to wade into this season of conflict. I want to wade into this disagreement. I want to have this argument that we've got going on, not to try to make you less and me more, but because I want to get to the heart of the issue and I want us to fix the issue that's there. That has to be the heart of what we're doing. So when we think about the things that really cause conflict in our marriages, there are three huge ones that cause conflict in every marriage, right? There's lack of communication and miscommunication. There's finances and money, and then there's sex. Those are the big three things that will destroy relationships, will destroy marriages. You're going to fight and argue and not understand each other in those three realms. But there's a lot more. Things like power and control, insecurity, differences in values, competition among one another, misunderstood feelings and needs. And all of these things, when they come up, when we fight and argue and disagree and have conflict around these things, our desire as husband and wife should be to move to a place where we solve and fix, not where we fight to win, all right? So here's the next thing that I want you to see. There's a couple of keys to doing this well. How do we get to a point where we solve the underlying issues? Here's two keys. Number one, don't attack the person, attack the problem. Right? Again, this goes beyond I want to win to I want to fix what's going on. Now, guys, when I say the word fix, we immediately have this reality of going, oh, yeah, we're going to fix the problem. And our wives aren't always interested in us just fixing the problem. Husbands and wives together, we have to make this reality to say, I don't want you just to fix me or fix the problem and then be like, okay, well, we got that taken care of. We can move on now. We need to see that there are underlying issues. And most of the time, from what we read in James and what we read from Paul in Galatians, is that the issues that really need to be fixed are where? Inside of us. I need to fix what's broken in me and my sin. And I need to ask my spouse to help me do that. Because as I struggle with my sin, I bring damaging things into my marriage and into my reality of relationship. And so the first thing that we've got to do is don't attack the person, attack the problem. Here's number two, know how to move the conflict toward a solution. And don't dwell on the problem endlessly. Like, it's good to identify, here's a problem area, here's something that we're struggling with, here's an area that we have conflict in, we have disagreement about, but don't just stay focused on that endlessly. Identify it and then go, now that we know, how do we bring reconciliation to this? How do we solve what we're going through so we can move past it, so we can get better? We tend to want to blame other people for our struggles, but Paul points us back, and again, he goes, the real struggle, the real conflict is in us. For the desires of the flesh, verse 17, is what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit, what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other so that you are not to do whatever you want. And so he goes, listen, if you're going to really do this well, you can't do whatever you want. You do what the Spirit of God leads you to under the divine authority of Jesus, your Savior. And so this conflict that's raging, this war that's being fought, most of it is internally because of your sin. Bring it under the nature of the Holy Spirit. Our sinful nature fights to remain in charge. Who we've been is fighting against who God wants us to be. And so here's the next thing that you're going to see on your outline. The way to deal with conflict in your marriage is to deal with the conflict in your own heart. That's it. That's the key. It's the root. If you want to deal with conflict in your marriage, you start by dealing with conflict in your own heart. So when two sinful people engage in relationships with one another, there's bound to be conflict. That's going to be true in all of your relationships. It's going to be true with your spouse. It's going to be true with your kids. It's going to be true with your coworkers, with the people that you're in class with at school. It's going to be true of the pizza delivery guy that comes to your door. You are going to be in conflict in relationship with everyone. That's just a reality of our broken, sinful nature. What I want to tell you today is that conflict is common. And we can actually use conflict to grow, to mature. We don't have to be afraid of conflict. I don't love conflict, but I don't have to be afraid of it. I can actually use conflict to grow and move forward to strengthen my marriage rather than us using conflict to crush our marriage. And so here's how I want you to see that this morning. Let me give you a word of encouragement and explain that conflict isn't all bad in your marriage. Conflict can actually help your marriage grow. And I want you to think about it like friction. All right, everybody just kind of rub your hands together like this for just a second. When you've got friction that gets created, if you were to do this long enough and hard enough, guess what the friction would do? There would be a negative reality to friction. What's going to happen? You're going to rub blisters on your hands, right? When I was a senior in high school, every year my basketball team did a summer camp. We would go away for a week and we would play 3 games a day for a week. And we would come away at the end of that week exhausted. But on the first day of my senior year, we have our 3 games. And after about game 2, I'm going, my feet really hurt. Like, I am not doing great here. By the end of the day, I could barely walk. And when I took my sock off that night, I had a blister that covered half of the bottom of my foot. It was enormous. And it was extremely painful. Right, and my coach was like, you got to wear more than one pair of socks, and you need to change those puppies every game. Like, don't wear the same sweaty socks all day long. That's gross. It's terrible. It's going to kill your feet. Change these things up. You got to do something to eliminate the blisters. Right, and so there's a negative consequence to conflict and friction, but there's also a positive reality of friction. Friction can be used in a good way to move things forward, right? You're all here this morning because the tires under your car came into conflict and friction with the road that you drove on. That friction actually helped move you forward and get you to the destination where you wanted to go. And if it wasn't for that friction, you would be sitting in your driveway spinning your wheels. I knew a guy that got married one time, and his groomsmen went out to the getaway car for the honeymoon, and they put a jack under the back tires, and they jacked it up just to where you couldn't tell it wasn't touching the ground. And he gets his wife in the car, and they're off to their honeymoon, and he cranks it up and hits the gas, and nothing. Because there's no friction. The tires aren't touching. He gets out, and he's looking around the car. What in the world is going on? Why isn't anything happening? He can't figure out why. I mean, the tires are just barely noticeably not on the ground. He can't even figure it out. They eventually have to go, man, it's jacked up. We got to take that thing out. And now where there's friction again, you can go. You can move forward. Your wedding can start, or your honeymoon can start, right? So friction can be good. Here's the trick. We have to know how to use it to our advantage. Conflict is going to come. You can either let it become a negative, or you can use it to your advantage in a positive way to move you forward, not to rub blisters, but to move you forward. My pastor that I served under for so many years said, marriage is bliss and sometimes blisters. That's the reality. There are gonna be blisters, but you can also take conflict and you can move your marriage forward if you know how to deal with it in an appropriate way. So here's the problem though. The relations slip, and this is what we talk about in this series. Where does the slip occur? Where do we mess up? The relations slip happens when we engage in conflict, but we aren't willing to communicate and forgive. We've got to be willing to do these two things, communicate and forgive. And so I want to ask you this. Do you have a plan in your marriage, in your relationships? Do you have a plan for how you communicate through conflict? And so married people, here's the homework for you today. At lunch this afternoon or at some point when you've got a little bit of time, make a moment and ask your spouse to tell you what's their preferred method of communication when conflict arises. Some people like to just jump in and go, conflict is here. We know it's present. Let's just fight it out and get it all on the table. And let's just lay our cards out. And we're going to talk about it right now while we're mad. And we're going to deal with it in this moment, in the heat of it all. Let's just go. Other people would say, man, if you do that, I'm going to shy away from that bit. I'm going to just fold under the pressure of it, and I'm not going to want to communicate. Some people need to say, I need time to go away for a little while, get my thoughts, cool down, and then come back to the table, and now let's talk. There have been times in my marriage, this will sound really weird because all I do for a living is talk. I'm not always great in communicating with my wife. When we talk, she's so much smarter than I am, and she just pokes holes in all of my thoughts and why I'm so, you know, right and she's so wrong and all these different things. And so sometimes for me, in the middle of that, I don't talk very well. I have to write a letter to my wife and say, here's where I'm struggling. Here's where I'm in conflict. Here's what's going on. Here's where I'm hurting. Here's something. And I just need to give you this. And in your own time, you read it and you hear from me without having the distractions of being, you know, my words getting in my mouth and garbled up. And I've written it out for you. Here's how I would like to communicate the conflict that I'm feeling that's happening in our marriage. I do that sometimes. Whatever it may be for you, there's different things that you prefer in communication when it comes to conflict. Sit down today and just ask your spouse, when it comes to conflict in our marriage, how do we best communicate to solve this problem? So that's one thing that I would encourage you to do. Here's what I want you to get, and we're going to see two more things here for marriage, and then we're going to wrap this up this morning. Following the conflict, we need to extend forgiveness. All right, so if you're taking notes this morning, just write this down. Following conflict, we need to extend forgiveness. Here's what we see in Colossians 3, 12 and 13. Paul writes, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, with kindness, with humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. All right, now let me ask you this question. How did Jesus forgive you? He forgave you completely, right? He forgave all of your sins, past, present, future. The Bible tells us that as far as the east is from the west, so far has God scattered our sin from us. He does not dwell on those things. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love keeps no record of wrong. If you've got a journal and you're tallying up how many times your spouse has wronged you, that's a recipe for disaster. He goes, you need to extend forgiveness completely. Here's what's beautiful about that. Jesus knew our sins. Romans says that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He didn't say, hey, listen, I'm willing to give up my life for you, but you get it all together first, fix yourself, deal with your sin problem, and then once you've got yourself all cleaned up and ready to go, then I'll lay down my life for you in your own perfection. He goes, no, Jesus knew your sin. Jesus knew your problems. Jesus knew everything that would cause conflict between you and him, and he said, it's worth it for me to lay down my life while you're still a sinner. Spouses, listen to this. You know your spouse's sins. Our calling is to love them regardless. You know where they struggle with sin. You know where they introduce hurt into your life. You know where they bring problems into your marriage. Love them through it. That's what Jesus did for us. Right, so we are supposed to be people who live to forgive one another. Following the conflict, forgive. And then after you forgive, here's the next thing on your outline, you need to reaffirm your spouse. After you forgive, reaffirm. Here's what I mean by that. I want to take us to the book of Song of Solomon. We're going to see a scene here that describes some conflict that's taken place between Solomon, the king of Israel, and his young bride. And I think what's going on here, based on a lot of the commentaries that I read, there's some things that are a little difficult in this passage, but a lot of people would say that this is a dream sequence. There's some things going on in the middle of this that the wife is dreaming. She's in her room at night. She's kind of had this fear of marrying the king, that he's going to be a workaholic and have the whole nation to run, and he's not going to come home in the evenings and spend time with her, and that's exactly what plays out. And so here's what we see chapter 5, verses 9 through 16. Actually, it starts in verse 2. I've got a mistake here. It says, I slept. This is the Shulamite, the bride. She says, I slept, but my heart was awake. Listen, my beloved is knocking. And he says, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. My head is drenched with dew and my hair with the dampness of the night. That's the context clue. It's really late at night. Solomon's walked home from the palace and his head is drenched with dew. He's come home really late. And her response is that he came home late. Here's what she says, verse 3. But I've taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I washed my feet. Must I soil them again? She goes, hey, look, you came home late. The door's locked and I'm in bed. I'm not coming to open that thing for you. You deal with the consequences of your tardiness, buddy. Like, that's the mentality that she's in. And so she says this, though, in verse 4. My beloved thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the bolt. Here's what that means. He leaves, but he kind of leaves a calling card behind. She says, I went to grab the door and to open it, and my hands were dripping with myrrh. He's left like a cologne, a fragrant thing on the door handle. And she goes, when I went to open the door, my hands now dripping in the myrrh that he left. This was a cool thing that they would do. And she says, but I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had left. He was gone. She was too late. In her anger, she didn't get to the door in time. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but didn't find him. I called him, but he did not answer. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. Now, here's why I think, and a lot of commentators will say this is a dream sequence because of what the watchmen do when the queen comes out. It says, they beat me, they bruised me, they took away my cloak, those watchmen of the walls, right? Like, no watchman under the authority of the king is going to do that to the queen. But I think in her mind, in her mentality, she's going, I've messed up and I deserve to be kind of beaten up about it. She has that reality. I'm going now to make this right. I'm going to look for my spouse. I'm going to go and solve this issue that I kind of helped create here, but I am just beating myself up over what I've allowed to happen. I think that's what's going on, and maybe one of the better ways to think about that passage. Now she calls out, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my beloved, what will you tell him? Tell him I'm faint with love. And then I love this. Her friends respond back. How is your beloved better than ours, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you so charge us, right? In other words, it's the middle of the night and you're calling out to us to come help you find your husband. Why should we leave our spouses to come help you find yours? How is he better than ours? And I love what happens with this wife. She says, my beloved, he's radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is purest gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold set with topaz. His body is like polished ivory decorated with lapis lazuli. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as its cedars. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, daughters of Jerusalem. Now let me ask you a question, ladies. Is she still mad at him for coming home late? No. No. Because she's moved past forgiveness to reaffirming. She goes, I'm going to just remember everything that I love about this man. I'm going to just boast on him and brag on him and tell you why he's better than your husband. You asked, so I'm going to tell you. And she just gushes over him. And I can guarantee you that when she saw Solomon next, she didn't go, hey, we got to talk about you coming home late. I bet they threw their arms around each other, kissed in an embrace, and went home. Because she's forgiven him, And she's reaffirmed him. Yes, you hurt me, but here's what I love about you. Yes, this brought pain into my life, but here's why you're the one for me, and you always will be. She moves from forgiveness to affirmation. And I think in our marriages, that'll help tremendously. As we see somebody who we're living in relationship with that sins against us, to God, I forgive you. And now I'm gonna remind you why I love you in the first place. So look for that. Maybe you're not as good with words as Solomon's wife was. Maybe you can't write your spouse this long, flowy, love language type poem. But just write down some things that you always admire and respect about your spouse, their character traits, who they are, what they do, and tell them, here's what I love about you. For the conflict to be resolved, both husband and wife must be committed to oneness. All right, we talked about that a little bit last week. In marriage, two become one. And if conflict is truly going to be resolved, husbands and wives must be committed to oneness. Let me give you some good news about marriage. Your marriage can make it in this world. Through the conflict, through the strife, through the difficulty that you're experiencing, it can make it, especially when both of you are committed to oneness. Now, we hear this stat thrown out all the time. What's the divorce rate in our country? What is it? 50%, right? That's what we hear all the time. And so the natural inclination in our hearts is when my marriage starts going off the rails, when things get really hard, man, this is just like half of the other marriages in our country. Maybe the best thing to do is just do what half of the people do and just bail on this. Let's just jump out. But I want to tell you some good news this morning. That statistic is not right. The divorce rate in this country is not 50%. It's never been 50%. It's never been close to 50%. So where did that come from? I've used it before in churches, in sermons like this. Oh, the divorce rate's 50%. Where did that come from? In the 1970s, they were making projections. Man, if the divorce rate continues in our country the way that we see it right now, by a certain time, we're gonna hit 50% of divorces and marriages in our country. And so people just ran with that. And they turned that statistic of if we continue in this trajectory into this is the reality. That's where that number came from. In her groundbreaking work, Shanti Feldon wrote a book called The Good News About Marriage. She uncovers this truth right now. According to one of the most recent Census Bureau surveys, 72% of people who have ever been married are still married to their first spouse. In other words, more than 7 out of 10 people are still married to their first spouse. That's good news, right? Now, is that true of every marriage? No, it's not. Unfortunately, marriages crumble. Unfortunately, a lot of you have been impacted and touched by divorce, whether in your own life or your parents or siblings, family members. Divorce is a reality of life. Not every marriage makes it, but the good news is many and not most will. So when you find that you're in the middle of conflict, that you're in the middle of this moment of having to make a decision, are we going to fight for it and stay with it, or am I going to bail out like half the other marriages in our country? Just think back to this reality. Your marriage can make it, but you've got to be willing to fight for it. You've got to fight for it. Listen, marriage is hard. Divorce is hard. I talked to some people this week that said the reality of my life has been that divorce is harder than marriage. Pick your hard. I can guarantee you, though, that if you're willing to fight for it and stay in the battle, that you're gonna reap the reward. And if you're moving into marriage, if you're getting ready for that, maybe it's a second marriage, maybe it's a different thing for you to go, man, this does not have to end badly like the last time. This does not have to be the problem that something in the past has been. My marriage can make it. If both of us will put Jesus at the center and both of us will be willing to fight for it, my marriage can make it. So move into marriage with that mentality. Stay married with that mentality, all right? So there are some things that I think are important for us to know. If your marriage is hard, welcome to the club, right? All of us have that same idea. But I want you to remember that the picture that God is painting to the world, for the world, through your marriage, is what his relationship of salvation and restoration looks like. God forgives. He brings us into relationship with him, and he restores us. That's what we're fighting for. That's where we find hope. So how do we avoid the slip of marriage? Here's where we're going to close this morning. James chapter 1, verses 19 through 20. If we're going to avoid having marriages that get killed by conflict, here's what James tells us. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. You don't have to be afraid of conflict in your marriages. You do have to learn to use it in a way that moves the marriage forward, right? So the goal of conflict is to move forward, to find ways to move forward. And so here's what I want to ask you to do this morning as we close. Ask God, as we have this moment just to think and respond back, ask God to show you, where does conflict exist? Where's it coming from internally? What do I bring into my marriage? But here's what I want us to see. How, God, do I learn to have a healthy view of conflict and deal with conflict in a healthy way that moves my marriage forward, that moves my relationship with my kids forward, that moves my relationship with my coworkers, my relationships with people? How do I move them forward? How do I use conflict in a positive way? And if there's unresolved conflict in your life, ask God how you can lean into that in a healthy way, to resolve that conflict internally, to bring some things to light, to talk about it with your spouse, and when necessary, and sometimes it's very necessary, talk to someone else. Get help for your relationship and be willing to fight for it.
Thanks so much for checking out our message today. We hope you are challenged and blessed by it. We want to invite you to come and worship with us in person if you live in the Tri-Cities area. We meet on Sunday mornings at 9 and 10:45 a.m. at One Fellowship Point in Kingsport, Tennessee. You can also get more information about us from our website or our mobile app. Have a great day.